He needed the improved eyesight to see in the darkness, and he made good use of the improved hearing as well. However, burning tin made the night seem even more chilly to his overly sensitive skin, and his feet registered every pebble and wooden ripple they touched. Keep Venture rose before him. Compared with the murky city, the keep seemed to blaze with light. High nobles kept different schedules from regular people. The ability to afford, even squander, lamp oil and candles meant that the wealthy didn't have to bow before the whims of season or sun. The keep was majestic. That much was visible simply from the architecture. While it maintained a defensive wall around the grounds, the keep itself was more an artistic construction than a fortification. Sturdy buttressings arced out from the sides, allowing for intricate windows and delicate spires. Brilliant stained glass windows stretched high along the sides of the rectangular building, and they shone with light from within, giving the surrounding mists a variegated glow. Kelsier burned iron, flaring it strong and searching the night for large sources of metal. He was too far away from the keep to use small items like coins or hinges. He'd need a larger anchor to cover this distance. Most of the blue lines were faint. Kelsier marked a couple of them, moving in a slow pattern up ahead. Probably a pair of guards standing on the rooftop. Kelsier would be sensing their breastplates and weapons. Despite alimentic considerations, most noblemen still armed their soldiers with metal. Mistings who could push or pull metals were uncommon, and full mistborn were even more so. Many lords thought it impractical to leave one's soldiers and guards relatively defenseless in order to counter such a small segment of the population. No, most high noblemen relied on other means to deal with allomancers. Kelsier smiled. Doxson had said that Lord Venture kept a squad of haze killers. If that was true, Kelsier would probably meet them before the night was through. He ignored the soldiers for the moment, instead focusing on a solid line of blue pointing toward the keep's lofty top. It likely had bronze or copper sheeting on the roof. Kelsier flared his iron, took a deep breath, and pulled on the line. With a sudden jerk, he was yanked into the air. Kelsier continued to burn iron, pulling himself toward the keep at a tremendous speed. Some rumors claimed that Mistborn could fly, but that was a wistful exaggeration. Pulling and pushing against metals usually felt less like flying than it did like falling, only in the wrong direction. An allomancer had to pull hard in order to get the proper momentum, and this sent him hurtling toward his anchor at daunting speeds. Kelsier shot toward the keep, mists curling around him. He easily cleared the protective wall surrounding the keep's grounds, but his body dropped slightly toward the ground as he moved. It was his pesky weight again. It tugged him down. Even the swiftest of arrows angled slightly toward the ground as it flew. The drag of his weight meant that instead of shooting right up to the roof, he swung in an arc. He approached the keep wall several dozen feet below the rooftop, still traveling at a terrible speed. Taking a deep breath, Kelsier burned pewter, using it to enhance his physical strength much in the same way that tin enhanced his senses. He turned himself in the air, hitting the stone wall feet first. Even his strengthened muscles protested at the treatment, but he stopped without breaking any bones. He immediately released his hold on the roof, dropping a coin and pushing against it even as he began to fall. He reached out, selecting a source of metal above him, one of the wire housings of a stained glass window, and pulled on it. The coin hit the ground below and was suddenly able to support his weight. Kelsier launched himself upward, pushing on the coin and pulling on the window at the same time. Then, extinguishing both metals, he let momentum carry him the last few feet up through the dark mists. Cloak flapping quietly, he crested the lip of the keep's upper service walkway, flipped himself over the stone railing, and landed quietly on the ledge. A startled guard stood not 3 paces away. Kelsier was upon the man in a second, jumping into the air, pulling slightly on the guard's steel breastplate, and throwing the man off balance. Kelsier whipped out one of his glass daggers, allowing the strength of his iron pull to bring him toward the guard. He landed with both feet against the man's chest, then crouched and sliced with a pewter-enhanced swing. The guard collapsed with a slit throat. Kelsier landed lithely beside him, ears straining in the night, listening for sounds of alarm. There were none. Kelsier left the guard to his gurgling demise. The man was likely a lesser nobleman. The enemy. If he were instead a Ska soldier, enticed into betraying his people in exchange for a few coins, well then Kelsier was even happier to send such men into their eternity. He pushed off the dying man's breastplate, hopping off the stone service walkway and onto the rooftop itself. The bronze roof was chill and slick beneath his feet. He scurried along it, heading toward the southern side of the building, looking for the balcony Doxon had mentioned. He wasn't too worried about being spotted. One purpose of this evening was to steal some Atium, the 10th and most powerful of the generally known allomantic metals. His other purpose, however, was to cause a commotion. He found the balcony with ease. Wide and broad, it was probably a sitting balcony, used to entertain small groups. It was quiet at the moment, however, empty, save for two guards. Kelsier crouched silently in the night mists above the balcony, furled gray cloak obscuring him, toes curling out over the side of the roof's metallic lip. The two guards chatted unwittingly below. "Time to make a bit of noise." Kelsier dropped to the ledge directly between the guards. Burning pewter to strengthen his body, he reached out and fiercely steel-pushed against both men at the same time. Braced as he was at the center, his push threw the guards away in opposite directions. The men cried out in surprise as the sudden force threw them backward, hurling them over the balcony railing into the darkness beyond. The guards screamed as they fell. Kelsier threw open the balcony doors, letting a wall of mist fall inward around him, its tendrils creeping forward to claim the darkened room beyond. "Third room in," Kelsier thought, moving forward in a crouching run. The second room was a quiet, greenhouse-like conservatory. Low beds containing cultivated bushes and small trees ran through the room, and one wall was made up of enormous floor-to-ceiling windows to provide sunlight for the plants. Though it was dark, Kelsier knew that the plants would all be of slightly different colors than the typical brown. Some would be white, others ruddy, and perhaps even a few light yellow. Plants that weren't brown were a rarity, cultivated and kept by the nobility. Kelsier moved quickly through the conservatory. He paused at the next doorway, noting its lighted outline. He extinguished his tin, lest his enhanced eyes be blinded when he entered the lit room, and threw open the door. He ducked inside, blinking against the light, a glass dagger in each hand. The room, however, was empty. It was obviously a study. A lantern burned on each wall beside bookcases, and it had a desk in the corner. Kelsier replaced his knives, burning steel and searching for sources of metal. There was a large safe in the corner of the room, but it was too obvious. Sure enough, another strong source of metal shone from inside the eastern wall. Kelsier approached, running his fingers along the plaster. Like many walls in noble keeps, this one was painted with a soft mural. Foreign creatures lounged beneath a red sun. The false section of wall was under 2 feet square, and it had been placed so that its cracks were obscured by the mural. "There's always another secret," Kelsier thought. He didn't bother trying to figure out how to open the contraption. He simply burned steel, reaching in and tugging against the weak source of metal that he assumed was the trapdoor's locking mechanism. It resisted at first, pulling him against the wall, but he burned pewter and yanked harder. The lock snapped and the panel swung open, revealing a small safe embedded in the wall. Kelsier smiled. It looked small enough for a pewter-enhanced man to carry, assuming he could get it out of the wall. He jumped up, iron pulling against the safe, and landed with his feet against the wall, 1 foot on either side of the open panel. He continued to pull, holding himself in place, and flared his pewter. Strength flooded his legs, and he flared steel as well, pulling against the safe. He strained, grunting slightly at the exertion. It was a test to see which would give out first, the safe or his legs. The safe shifted in its mountings. Kelsier pulled harder, muscles protesting. For an extended moment, nothing happened. Then the safe shook and ripped free of the wall. Kelsier fell backward, burning steel and pushing against the safe to get out of the way. He landed maladroitly, sweat dripping from his brow as the safe crashed to the wooden floor, throwing up splinters. A pair of startled guards burst into the room. "About time," Kelsier noted, raising a hand and pulling on one of the soldiers' swords. It whipped out of its sheath, spinning in the air and streaking toward Kelsier point first. He extinguished his iron, stepping to the side and catching the sword by its hilt as momentum carried it past.
"Mistborn!"
the guard screamed. Kelsier smiled and jumped forward. The guard pulled out a dagger. Kelsier pushed it, tearing the weapon out of the man's hand, then swung, shearing the guard's head from his body. The second guard cursed, tugging free the release tie on his breastplate. Kelsier pushed on his own sword, even as he completed his swing. The sword ripped from his fingers and hissed directly toward the second guard. The man's armor dropped free, preventing Kelsier from pushing against it, just as the first guard's corpse fell to the ground. A moment later, Kelsier's sword planted itself in the second guard's now unarmored chest. The man stumbled quietly, then collapsed. Kelsier turned from the bodies, cloak rustling. His anger was quiet, not as fierce as it had been the night he'd killed Lord Tresting. But he felt it still, felt it in the itching of his scars and in the remembered screams of the woman he loved. As far as Kelsier was concerned, any man who upheld the final empire also forfeited his right to live. He flared his pewter, strengthening his body, then squatted down and lifted the safe. He teetered for a second beneath its weight, then got his balance and began to shuffle back toward the balcony. Perhaps the safe held atium, perhaps it didn't. However, he didn't have time to search out other options. He was halfway through the conservatory when he heard footsteps from behind. He turned to see the study flooding with figures. There were eight of them, each one wearing a loose gray robe and carrying a dueling cane and a shield instead of a sword. Haze killers. Kelsier let the safe drop to the ground. Haze killers weren't allomancers, but they were trained to fight mistings and mistborn. There wouldn't be a single bit of metal on their bodies, and they would be ready for his tricks. Kelsier stepped back, stretching and smiling. The eight men fanned into the study, moving with quiet precision.
This should be interesting.
The haze killers attacked, dashing by twos into the conservatory. Kelsier pulled out his daggers, ducking beneath the first attack and slicing at a man's chest. The haze killer jumped back, however, and forced Kelsier away with a swing of his cane. Kelsier flared his pewter, letting strengthened legs carry him back in a powerful jump. With one hand, he whipped out a handful of coins and pushed them against his opponents. The metal discs shot forward, zipping through the air, but his enemies were ready for this. They raised their shields, and the coins bounced off the wood, throwing up splinters but leaving the men unharmed. Kelsier eyed the other haze killers as they filled the room, advancing on him. They couldn't hope to fight him in an extended battle. Their tactic would be to rush him at once, hoping for a quick end to the fight, or to at least stall him until allomancers could be awakened and brought to the fight. He glanced at the safe as he landed. He couldn't leave without it. He needed to end the fight quickly as well. Flaring pewter, he jumped forward, trying an experimental dagger swipe, but he couldn't get inside his opponent's defenses. Kelsier barely ducked away in time to avoid getting cracked on the head by the end of a cane. Three of the haze killers dashed behind him, cutting off his retreat into the balcony room.
Great, Kelsier thought, trying to keep an eye on all eight men at once.
They advanced on him with careful precision, working as a team. Gritting his teeth, Kelsier flared his pewter again. It was running low, he noticed. Pewter was the fastest burning of the basic eight metals.
No time to worry about that now.
The men behind him attacked, and Kelsier jumped out of the way, pulling on the safe to tug himself toward the center of the room. He pushed as soon as he hit the ground near the safe, launching himself into the air at an angle. He tucked, flipping over the heads of two attackers, and landed on the ground beside a well-cultivated tree bed. He spun, flaring his pewter, and raising his arm in defense against the swing he knew would come. The dueling cane connected with his arm. A burst of pain ran down his forearm, but his pewter-enhanced bone held. Kelsier kept moving, driving his other hand forward and slamming a dagger into his opponent's chest. The man stumbled back in surprise, the motion ripping away Kelsier's dagger. A second haze killer attacked, but Kelsier ducked, then reached down with his free hand, ripping his coin pouch off of his belt. The haze killer prepared to block Kelsier's remaining dagger, but Kelsier raised his other hand instead, slamming the coin pouch into the man's shield. Then he pushed on the coins inside. The haze killer cried out, the force of the intense steel push throwing him backward. Kelsier flared his steel, pushing so hard that he tossed himself backward as well, away from the pair of men who had tried to attack him. Kelsier and his enemy flew away from each other, hurled in opposite directions. Kelsier collided with the far wall, but kept pushing, smashing his opponent, pouch, shield, and all, against one of the massive conservatory windows. Glass shattered, sparkles of lantern light from the study playing across its shards. The haze killer's desperate face disappeared into the darkness beyond, and mist, quiet yet ominous, began to creep in through the shattered window. The other six men advanced relentlessly, and Kelsier was forced to ignore the pain in his arm as he ducked two swings. He spun out of the way, brushing past a small tree, but a third haze killer attacked, smashing his cane into Kelsier's side. The attack threw Kelsier into the tree bed. He tripped, then collapsed near the entrance to the lit study, dropping his dagger. He gasped in pain, rolling to his knees and holding his side. The blow would have broken another man's ribs. Even Kelsier would have a massive bruise. The six men moved forward, spreading to surround him again. Kelsier stumbled to his feet, vision growing dizzy from pain and exertion. He gritted his teeth, reaching down and pulling out one of his remaining vials of metal. He downed its contents in a single gulp, replenishing his pewter, then burned tin. The light nearly blinded him, and the pain in his arm and side suddenly seemed more acute, but the burst of enhanced senses cleared his head. The six haze killers advanced in a sudden coordinated attack. Kelsier whipped his hand to the side, burning iron and searching for metal. The closest source was a thick, silvery paperweight on a desk just inside the study. Kelsier flipped it into his hand, then turned, arm held toward the advancing men, falling into an offensive stance. "All right," he growled. Kelsier burned steel with a flash of strength. The rectangular ingot ripped from his hand, streaking through the air. The foremost haze killer raised his shield, but he moved too slowly. The ingot hit the man's shoulder with a crunch, and he dropped, crying out. Kelsier spun to the side, ducking a staff swing and putting a haze killer between himself and the fallen man. He burned iron, pulling the ingot back toward him. It whipped through the air, cracking the second haze killer in the side of the head. The man collapsed as the ingot flipped into the air. One of the remaining men cursed, rushing forward to attack. Kelsier pushed the still airborne ingot, flipping it away from him, and away from the attacking haze killer, who had his shield raised. Kelsier heard the ingot hit the ground behind him, and he reached up, burning pewter, and caught the haze killer's cane mid-swing. The haze killer grunted, struggling against Kelsier's enhanced strength. Kelsier didn't bother trying to pull the weapon free. Instead, he pulled sharply on the ingot behind him, bringing it toward his own back at a deadly speed. He twisted at the last moment, using his momentum to spin the haze killer around, right into the ingot's path. The man dropped. Kelsier flared pewter, steadying himself against attacks. Sure enough, a cane smashed against his shoulders. He stumbled to his knees as the wood cracked, but flared tin kept him conscious. Pain and lucidity flashed through his mind. He pulled on the ingot, ripping it out of the dying man's back, and stepped to the side, letting the impromptu weapon shoot past him. The two haze killers nearest him crouched warily. The ingot snapped into one of the men's shields, but Kelsier didn't continue pushing lest he throw himself off balance. Instead, he burned iron, wrenching the ingot back toward himself. He ducked, extinguishing iron, and feeling the ingot whoosh through the air above him. There was a crack as it collided with the man who had been sneaking up on him. Kelsier spun, burning iron, then steel, to send the ingot soaring toward the final two men. They stepped out of the way, but Kelsier tugged on the ingot, dropping it to the ground directly in front of them. The men regarded it warily, distracted as Kelsier ran and jumped, steel pushing himself against the ingot and flipping over the men's heads. The haze killers cursed, spinning. As Kelsier landed, he pulled the ingot again, bringing it up to smash into a man's skull from behind. The haze killer fell silently, The ingot flipped a few times in the darkness, and Kelsier snatched it from the air, its cool surface slick with blood. Mist from the shattered window flowed by his feet, curling up around his legs. He brought his hand down, pointing it directly at the last remaining haze killer. Somewhere in the room, a fallen man groaned. The remaining haze killer stepped back, then dropped his weapon and dashed away. Kelsier smiled, lowering his hand. Suddenly the ingot was pushed from his fingers. It shot across the room, smashing through another window. Kelsier cursed, spinning to see another, larger group of men pouring into the study. They wore the clothing of noblemen. Allomancers. Several of them raised hands, and a flurry of coins shot toward Kelsier. He flared steel, pushing the coins out of the way. Windows shattered and wood splintered as the room was sprayed with coins. Kelsier felt a tug on his belt as his final vial of metal was ripped away, pulled toward the other room. Several burly men ran forward in a crouch, staying beneath the shooting coins. Thugs. Mistings who, like ham, could burn pewter. "Time to go," Kelsier thought, deflecting another wave of coins, gritting his teeth against the pain in his side and arm. He glanced behind him. He had a few moments, but he was never going to make it back to the balcony. As more mistings advanced, Kelsier took a deep breath and dashed toward one of the broken floor-to-ceiling windows. He leapt out into the mists, turning in the air as he fell, and reached out to pull firmly on the fallen safe. He jerked in mid-air, swinging down toward the side of the building as if tied to the safe by a tether. He felt the safe slide forward, grinding against the floor of the conservatory as Kelsier's weight pulled against it. He slammed against the side of the building, but continued to pull, catching himself on the upper side of a windowsill. He strained, standing upside down in the window well, pulling on the safe. The safe appeared over the lip of the floor above. It teetered, then fell out the window and began to plummet directly toward Kelsier. He smiled, extinguishing his iron and pushing away from the building with his legs, throwing himself out into the mists like some insane diver. He fell backward through the darkness, barely catching sight of an angry face poking out of the broken window above. Kelsier pulled carefully against the safe, moving himself in the air. Mists curled around him, obscuring his vision, making him feel as if he weren't falling at all, but hanging in the middle of nothingness. He reached the safe, then twisted in the air and pushed against it, throwing himself upward. The safe crashed into the cobblestones just below. Kelsier pushed against the safe slightly, slowing himself, until he eventually jerked to a halt in the air just a few feet above the ground. He hung in the mists for a moment, ribbons from his cloak curling and flapping in the wind, then let himself drop to the ground beside the safe. The strongbox had been shattered by the fall. Kelsier pried open its mangled front, tin-enhanced ears listening to calls of alarm from the building above. Inside the safe, he found a small pouch of gemstones and a couple of 10,000 boxing letters of credit, all of which he pocketed. He felt around inside, suddenly worried that the night's work had been for naught. Then his fingers found it, a small pouch at the very back. He pulled it open, revealing a grouping of dark, bead-like bits of metal. Atium. His scars flared, memories of his time in the pits returning to him. He pulled the pouch tight and stood. With amusement, he noticed a twisted form lying on the cobblestones a short distance away, the mangled remains of the haze killer he'd thrown out the window. Kelsier walked over and retrieved his coin pouch with a tug of iron pulling. No, this night was not a waste. Even if he hadn't found the atium, any night that ended with a group of dead noblemen was a successful one, in Kelsier's opinion. He gripped his pouch in one hand and the bag of atium in the other. He kept his pewter burning. Without the strength it lent his body, he'd probably collapse from the pain of his wounds, and dashed off into the night, heading toward Clubs's shop. I never wanted this, true, but somebody has to stop the deepness, and apparently Terrace is the only place this can be done. On this fact, however, I don't have to take the word of the philosophers. I can feel our goal now, can sense it, though the others cannot. It pulses in my mind, far off in the mountains. 6. Vin awoke to a quiet room, red morning sunlight peeking through cracks in the shutters. She lay in bed for a moment, unsettled. Something felt wrong. It wasn't that she was waking up in an unfamiliar place. Traveling with Reen had accustomed her to a nomadic lifestyle. It took her a moment to realize the source of her discomfort. The room was empty. Not only was it empty, it was open. Uncrowded. And it was comfortable. She lay on an actual mattress raised on posts, with sheets and a plush quilt. The room was decorated with a sturdy wooden armoire, and even had a circular rug. Perhaps another might have found the room cramped and Spartan, but to Vin it seemed lavish. She sat up, frowning. It felt wrong to have a room all to herself. She had always been crammed into tight bunk rooms filled with crew members. Even while traveling, she had slept in beggars' alleys or rebel caves, and Reen had been there with her. She had always been forced to fight to find privacy. Being given it so easily seemed to devalue the years she had spent relishing her brief moments of solitude. She slipped out of bed, not bothering to open the shutters. The sunlight was faint, which meant it was still early morning. But she could already hear people moving in the hallway. She crept to the door, creaking it open and peeking out. After leaving Kelsier the night before, Doxson had led Vin to Clubs' shop. Because of the late hour, Clubs had immediately led them to their separate rooms. Vin, however, had not gone to bed immediately. She had waited until everyone was asleep, then had snuck out to inspect her surroundings. The residence was almost more of an inn than it was a shop. Though it had a showroom below and a large workshop in the back, the building's second floor was dominated by several long hallways lined with guest rooms. There was a third floor, and the doors were more widely spaced there, implying larger rooms. She hadn't tapped for trap doors or false walls, the noise might have awakened someone, but experience told her that it wouldn't be a proper lair if it didn't have at least a secret basement and some bolt holes. Overall, she was impressed. The carpentry equipment and half-finished projects below indicated a reputable working front. The lair was secure, well-stocked, and well-maintained. Watching through the crack in her door, Vin made out a group of about 6 groggy young men coming out of the hallway opposite her own. They wore simple clothing and made their way down the stairs toward the workroom. "Apprentice carpenters," Vin thought. "That's Clubs' front. He's a ska craftsman." Most ska lived lives of drudgery on the plantations. Even those who lived in a city were generally forced to do menial labor. However, some talented few were allowed a trade. They were still ska. They were paid poorly, and were always subject to the whims of the nobility. However, they had a measure of freedom that most ska would envy. Clubs was probably a master carpenter. What would entice such a man, one who had, by ska standards, an amazing life, to risk joining the underground? "He is a misting," Vin thought. "Kelsier and Doxson called him a smoker." She would probably have to figure out what that meant on her own. Experience told her that a powerful man like Kelsier would withhold knowledge from her as long as he could, stringing her along with occasional tidbits. His knowledge was what bound her to him. It would be unwise to give away too much too quickly. Footsteps sounded outside, and Vin continued to peek through the crack.
"You'll want to get ready, Vin," Doxson said as he passed her door.
He wore a nobleman's dress shirt and slacks, and he already looked awake and trim. He paused, continuing.
"There's a fresh bath for you in the room at the end of the hallway, and I had Clubs scrounge you up a few changes of clothing. They should fit well enough until we can get you something more appropriate. Take your time in the bath. Kel's planned a meeting for this afternoon, but we can't start until Breeze and Ham arrive."
Doxson smiled, eyeing her through the cracked door, then continued on down the hallway. Vin flushed at being caught.
"These are observant men. I'm going to have to remember that."
The hallway grew quiet. She slipped out her door and crept down to the indicated room and was half surprised to find that there was indeed a warm bath waiting for her. She frowned, studying the tiled chamber and metal tub. The water smelled scented, after the fashion of noble ladies.
"These men are more like noblemen than Scar," Vin thought.
She wasn't certain what she thought of that. However, they obviously expected her to do as they did, so she closed and bolted the door, then disrobed and crawled into the tub. She smelled funny. Even though the scent was faint, Vin still caught whiffs of herself occasionally. It was the smell of a passing noblewoman, the scent of a perfumed drawer opened by her brother's burgling fingers. The smell grew less noticeable as the morning progressed, but it still worried her. It would distinguish her from other Ska. If this crew expected her to take those baths regularly, she would have to request that the perfumes be removed. The morning meal was more up to her expectations. Several Ska women of various ages worked the shop's kitchen, preparing bay wraps, rolls of thin flat bread stuffed with boiled barley and vegetables. Vin stood by the kitchen doorway, watching the women work. None of them smelled like she did, though they were far more cleanly and well-groomed than average Ska. In fact, there was an odd sense of cleanliness to the entire building. She hadn't noticed it the night before because of the darkness, but the floor was scrubbed clean. All of the workers, kitchen women or apprentices, had clean faces and hands. It felt odd to Vin. She was accustomed to her own fingers being black with ash stains. With Rean, if she'd ever washed her face, she had quickly rubbed it with ash again. A clean face stood out on the streets.
"No ash in the corners," she thought, eyeing the floor. "The room is swept."
She'd never lived in such a place before. It was almost like living in some nobleman's house. She glanced back at the kitchen women. They wore simple dresses of white and gray, with scarves around the tops of their heads and long tails of hair hanging out the back. Vin fingered her own hair. She kept it short, like a boy's. Her current ragged cut had been given by one of the other crew members. She wasn't like these women. She never had been. By Rean's command, Vin had lived so that other crew members would think of her as a thief first, and a girl second.
"But what am I now?"
Perfumed by her bath, yet wearing the tan trousers and buttoning shirt of an apprentice craftsman, she felt distinctly out of place. And that was bad. If she felt awkward, then she undoubtedly looked awkward, too. Something else to make her stand out. Vin turned, eyeing the workroom. The apprentices were already about their morning labors, working on various bits of furniture. They stayed in the back while Clubs worked in the main showroom, putting detailed finishing touches on the pieces. The back kitchen door suddenly slammed open. Vin slipped reflexively to the side, putting her back to a wall and peeking around into the kitchen. Ham stood in the kitchen doorway, framed by red sunlight. He wore a loose shirt and vest, both sleeveless, and carried several large packs. He wasn't dirtied by soot. None of the crew had ever been, the few times Vin had seen them. Ham walked through the kitchen and into the workroom. "So," he said, dropping his packs. "Anyone know which room is mine?"
"I'll ask Master Cladent," one of the apprentices said, moving into the front room.
Ham smiled, stretching, then turned toward Vin.
"Morning, Vin. You know, you don't have to hide from me. We're on the same team."
Vin relaxed, but remained where she was, standing beside a line of mostly finished chairs.
"You're going to live here, too?"
"It always pays to stay near the smoker," Ham said, turning and disappearing back into the kitchen.
He returned a moment later with a stack of four large bay wraps.
"Anyone know where Kel is?"
"Sleeping," Vin said. "He came in late last night and hasn't gotten up yet."
Ham grunted, taking a bite of a bay wrap.
"Doc's?"
"In his room on the third floor," Vin said. "He got up early, came down to get something to eat, and went back upstairs."
She didn't add that she knew, from peeking through the keyhole, that he was sitting at his desk, scribbling on some papers.
Ham raised an eyebrow.
You always keep track of where everyone is like that?
Yes. Ham paused, then chuckled.
You're an odd kid, Vin.
He gathered up his packs as the apprentice returned, and the two moved up the stairs. Vin stood, listening to their footsteps. They stopped about halfway down the first hallway, perhaps a few doors from her room. The scent of steamed barley enticed her. Vin eyed the kitchen. Ham had gone in and taken food. Was she allowed to do the same? Trying to look confident, Vin strode into the kitchen. A pile of bay wraps sat on a platter, probably to be delivered to the apprentices as they worked. Vin picked up two of them. None of the women objected. In fact, a few of them even nodded respectfully toward her.
I'm an important person now, she thought with a measure of discomfort.
Did they know that she was Mistborn? Or was she simply treated with respect because she was a guest? Eventually, Vin took a third bay wrap and fled to her room. It was more food than she could possibly eat. However, she intended to scrape out the barley and save the flatbread, which would keep well should she need it later. A knock came at her door. Vin answered it, pulling the door open with a careful motion. A young man stood outside. The boy who had been with Clubs, back at Cayman's lair the night before. Thin, tall, and awkward-looking, he was dressed in gray clothing. He was perhaps 14, though his height might have made him look older than he was. He seemed nervous for some reason.
Yes? Vin asked.
Vin frowned.
What?
You want it, he said in a thick eastern accent. Ups in the where above with the doing. With Master Jax to the third floor. I gotta go.
The boy blushed, then turned and hurried away, scrambling up the stairs. Vin stood in the doorway of her room, dumbfounded. Was that supposed to make any sense? She wondered. She peeked into the hallway. The boy had seemed like he expected her to follow him. Finally, she decided to do so, carefully making her way up the steps. Voices were coming from an open door at the end of the hallway. Vin approached and peeked around the corner to find a well-decorated room, set with a fine rug and comfortable-looking chairs. A hearth burned at the side of the room, and the chairs were arranged to point toward a large charcoal writing board set atop an easel. Kelsier stood, leaning one elbow resting against the brick hearth, a cup of wine in his hand. Angling herself slightly, Vin could see that he was talking to Breeze. The soother had arrived well into midday and had appropriated half of Clubs's apprentices to unload his possessions. Vin had watched from her window as the apprentices had carried the luggage, disguised as boxes of lumber scraps, up to Breeze's room. Breeze himself hadn't bothered to help. Ham was there, as was Doxson, and Clubs was settling himself into the large overstuffed chair farthest from Breeze. The boy who had fetched Vin sat on a stool beside Clubs, and he was obviously making a point of trying not to look at her. The final occupied chair held the man Yeadon, dressed, as before, in common ska workers' clothing. He sat in his chair without resting against its back, as if he disapproved of its plushness. His face was darkened with soot, as Vin expected of a ska worker. There were two empty chairs. Kelsier noticed Vin standing by the doorway and gave her one of his inviting smiles.
"Well, there she is. Come in."
Vin scanned the room. There was a window, though its shutters were closed against approaching gloom. The only chairs were the ones in Kelsier's half-circle. Resigned, she moved forward and took the empty chair beside Doxson. It was too big for her, and she settled into it with her knees folded beneath her.
"That's all of us," Kelsier said. "Who's the last chair for?"
Ham asked. Kelsier smiled, winked, but ignored the question.
"All right, let's talk. We've got something of a task ahead of ourselves, and the sooner we begin outlining a plan, the better."
"I thought you had a plan," Yeadon said uncomfortably.
"I have a framework," Kelsier said.
I know what needs to happen, and I have a few ideas on how to do it. But you don't gather a group like this and just tell them what to do. We need to work this out together, beginning with a list of problems we need to deal with if we want the plan to work.
Well, Ham said, let me get the framework straight first. The plan is to gather Yidan an army, cause chaos in Luthadel, secure the palace, steal the Lord Ruler's Atium, then leave the government to collapse?
Essentially, Kelsier said.
Then, Ham said, our main problem is the garrison. If we want chaos in Luthadel, then we can't have 20,000 troops here to keep the peace. Not to mention the fact that Yidan's troops will never take the city while there is any sort of armed resistance on the walls.
Kelsier nodded. Picking up a piece of chalk, he wrote, Luthadel Garrison, up on the board.
What else? We'll need a way to make said chaos in Luthadel, Breeze said, gesturing with a cup of wine. Your instincts are right, my dear man. This city is where the Ministry makes its headquarters and the great houses run their mercantile empires. We'll need to bring Luthadel down if we want to break the Lord Ruler's ability to govern.
Mentioning the nobility brings up another point, Doxon added. The great houses all have guard forces in the city, not to mention their allomancers. If we're going to deliver the city to Yidan, we'll have to deal with those noblemen.
Kelsier nodded, writing chaos and great houses beside Luthadel Garrison on his board.
The Ministry, Club said, leaning back in his plush chair so much that Vin almost couldn't see his grumpy face. There'll be no change in government as long as the Steel Inquisitors have anything to say about it.
Kelsier added Ministry to the board.
What else?
Atium, Ham said. You might as well write it up there. We'll need to secure the palace quickly, once General Mayhem starts, and make certain nobody else takes the opportunity to slip into the treasury.
Kelsier nodded, writing Atium, Secure Treasury, on the board.
We will need to find a way to gather Yidan's troops, Breeze added. We have to be quiet, but quick, and train them somewhere that the Lord Ruler won't find them.
We also might want to make certain that the Ska Rebellion is ready to take control of Luthadel, Doxon added. Seizing the palace and digging in will make for a spectacular story, but it would be nice if Yidan and his people were actually ready to govern once this is all over.
Troops and Ska Rebellion were added to the board.
And, Kelsier said, I'm going to add Lord Ruler. We'll at least want a plan to get him out of the city, should other options fail.
After writing Lord Ruler on the list, he turned back toward the group.
Did I forget anything?
Well, Yidan said dryly, if you're listing problems we'll have to overcome, you should write up there that we're all bloody insane, though I doubt we can fix that fact.
The group chuckled, and Kelsier wrote Yidan's bad attitude on the board. Then he stepped back, looking over the list.
When you break it down like that, it doesn't look so bad, does it?
Vin frowned, trying to decide if Kelsier was attempting a joke or not.
The list wasn't just daunting, it was disturbing. 20,000 Imperial soldiers, the collected forces and power of the High Nobility, the Ministry? One Steel Inquisitor was said to be more powerful than 1,000 troops.
More discomforting, however, was how matter-of-factly they regarded the issues. How could they even think of resisting the Lord Ruler? He was... well, he was the Lord. He ruled all of the world. He was the creator, protector, and punisher of mankind. He had saved them from the deepness, then had brought the ash and the mists as a punishment for the people's lack of faith. Vin wasn't particularly religious. Intelligent thieves knew how to avoid the Steel Ministry, but even she knew the legends. And yet, the group regarded their list of problems with determination. There was a grim mirth about them, as if they understood that they had a better chance of making the sun rise at night than they did of overthrowing the final empire. Yet they were still going to try.
By the Lord Ruler, Vin whispered, you're serious. You really mean to do this?
Don't use his name as an oath, Vin, Kelsier said.
Even blasphemy honors him. When you curse by that creature's name, you acknowledge him as your god. Vin fell silent, sitting back in her chair, a bit numb.
Anyway, Kelsier said, smiling lightly. Anyone have any ideas on how to overcome these problems?
Besides Yeadon's attitude, of course. We all know he's hopeless. The room was quiet and thoughtful.
Thoughts? Kelsier asked. Angles? Impressions?
Breeze shook his head.
Now that it's all up there, I can't help wondering if the child has a point. This is a daunting task.
But it can be done, Kelsier said.
Let's start by talking about how to break the city. What can we do that would be so threatening that it would throw the nobility into chaos? Maybe even get the palace guard out into the city, exposing them to our troops.
Something that would distract the ministry and the Lord Ruler himself while we move our troops in to attack.
Well, a general revolution among the populace comes to mind, Ham said.
Won't work, Yeadon said firmly.
Why not? Ham asked. You know how the people are treated. They live in slums, work in mills and smithies the entire day, and half of them still starve.
Yeadon shook his head.
Don't you understand? The rebellion has been trying for 1,000 years to get the ska in this city to rise up. It never works. They're too beaten down. They don't have the will or the hope to resist. That's why I had to come to you to get an army.
The room fell still. Vin, however, slowly nodded her head. She'd seen it. She'd felt it. One didn't fight the Lord Ruler. Even living as a thief, crouching at the edge of society, she knew that. There would be no rebellion.
He's right, I'm afraid, Kelsier said. The ska won't rise up, not in their current state. If we're going to overthrow this government, we'll need to do it without the help of the masses. We can probably recruit our soldiers from among them, but we can't count on the general populace.
Could we cause a disaster of some sort? Ham asked. A fire, maybe?
Kelsier shook his head.
It might disrupt trade for a while, but I doubt it would have the effect we want. Besides, the cost in ska lives would be too high.
The slums would burn, not stone nobleman keeps.
Breeze sighed.
What then would you have us do?
Kelsier smiled, eyes twinkling.
What if we turned the great houses against each other?
Breeze paused.
A house war, he said, taking a speculative sip of his wine. It's been a while since the city had one of those.
Which means that tensions have had plenty of time to brew, Kelsier said. The high nobility are growing increasingly powerful. The Lord Ruler barely has control over them anymore, which is why we have a chance of shattering his grip. Luthadel's great houses are the key. They control imperial trade, not to mention enslave the greatest majority of the ska.
Kelsier pointed at the board, moving his finger between the line that said chaos and the line that said great houses.
If we can turn the houses inside Luthadel against each other, we can bring down the city. Mistborn will start assassinating house leaders. Fortunes will collapse. It won't take long before there is open warfare in the streets. Part of our contract with Yeadon states that we'll give him an opening to seize the city for himself. Can you think of a better one than that?
Breeze nodded with a smile.
It has flair, and I do like the idea of having the noblemen kill each other.
You always like it better when someone else does the work, Breeze, Ham noted.
My dear friend, Breeze replied, the entire point of life is to find ways to get others to do your work for you. Don't you know anything about basic economics?
Ham raised an eyebrow.
Actually,
It was a rhetorical question, Ham,
Breeze interrupted, rolling his eyes.
Those are the best kind, Ham replied.
Philosophy later, Ham, Kelsier said. Stay on task. What do you think of my suggestion?
It could work, Ham said, settling back. But I can't see the Lord Ruler letting things go that far.
It's our job to see that he doesn't have a choice, Kelsier said. He's known to let his nobility squabble, probably to keep them off balance. We fan those tensions, then somehow force the garrison to pull out. When the houses start fighting in earnest, the Lord Ruler won't be able to do anything to stop them, except perhaps send his palace guard into the streets, which is exactly what we want him to do.
He could also send for a Kolos army, Ham noted.
True, Kelsier said, but they're stationed a moderate distance away. That's a flaw we need to exploit. Kolos troops make wonderful grunts, but they have to be kept away from civilized cities. The very center of the Final Empire is exposed, yet the Lord Ruler is confident in his strength. And why shouldn't he be? He hasn't faced a serious threat in centuries. Most cities only need small policing forces.
20,000 men is hardly a small number, Breeze said.
It is on a national scale, Kelsier said, holding up a finger. The Lord Ruler keeps most of his troops on the edges of his empire, where the threat of rebellion is strongest. That's why we're going to strike him here, in Luthadel itself. And that's why we're going to succeed.
Assuming we can deal with that garrison, Doxson noted.
Kelsier nodded, turning to write House War underneath Great Houses and Chaos.
All right, then. Let's talk about the garrison. What are we going to do about it?
Well, Ham said speculatively, historically, the best way to deal with a large force of soldiers is to have your own large force of soldiers. We're going to raise Yeadon an army. Why not let them attack the garrison? Isn't that kind of the point of raising the army in the first place?
That won't work, Hammond, Breeze said. He regarded his empty cup of wine, then held it up toward the boy sitting beside Clubs, who immediately scurried over to refill it.
If we wanted to defeat the garrison, Breeze continued, we'd need our own force of at least its same size. We'd probably want one larger, since our men will be newly trained. We might be able to raise Yeadon an army. We might even be able to get him one large enough to hold the city for a while. But getting him one large enough to take on the garrison inside its fortifications? We might as well give up now, if that's our plan.
The group fell silent. Vin squirmed in her chair, looking over each man in turn. Breeze's words had a profound effect. Ham opened his mouth to speak, then closed it again, sitting back to reconsider. All right, Kelsier finally said. We'll get back to the garrison in a moment. Let's look at our own army. How can we raise one of substantial size and hide it from the Lord Ruler?
Again, that will be difficult, Breeze said. There is a very good reason why the Lord Ruler feels safe in the Central Dominance. There are constant patrols on the roadways and canals, and you can hardly spend a day traveling without running into a village or plantation. This isn't the sort of place where you can raise an army without attracting notice.
The rebellion has those caves up to the north, Doxson said. We might be able to hide some men there.
Yeadon paled.
You know about the Argua Caverns?
Kelsier rolled his eyes. Even the Lord Ruler knows about them, Yeadon. The rebels there just aren't dangerous enough to bother him yet.
How many people do you have, Yeadon? Ham asked. In Luthadel and around it, caves included. What do we have to start with?
Yeadon shrugged.
Maybe 300, including women and children.
And how many do you think those caves could hide? Ham asked.
Yeadon shrugged again.
The caves could support a larger group for certain, Kelsier said. Perhaps 10,000. I've been there. The rebellion has been hiding people in them for years, and the Lord Ruler has never bothered to destroy them.
I can imagine why, Ham said. Cave fighting is nasty business, especially for the aggressor. The Lord Ruler likes to keep defeats to a minimum. He's nothing if not vain. Anyway, 10,000. That's a decent number. They could hold the palace with ease. Maybe even be able to hold the city, if it had the walls.
Doxson turned to Yeadon.
When you asked for an army, what size were you thinking? 10,000 sounds like a good number, I suppose, Eden said. Actually, it's a bit larger than I was thinking.
Breeze tipped his cup slightly, swirling the wine.
I hate to sound contrary again, that's usually Hammond's job, but I do have to return to our earlier problem. 10,000 men. That won't even frighten the garrison. We're talking about 20,000 well-armed, well-trained troops.
He has a point, Cal, Doxson said. He had found a small book somewhere and had begun taking notes on the meeting. Kelsier frowned. Ham nodded.
Any way you look at it, Cal, that garrison is going to be a tough stone to break. Perhaps we should just focus on the nobility. Maybe we can cause enough chaos that even the garrison won't be able to suppress it.
Kelsier shook his head.
Doubtful. The garrison's primary duty is to maintain order in the city. If we can't deal with those troops, we'll never pull this off.
He paused, then eyed Vin. What do you think, Vin? Any suggestions? She froze. Cayman had never asked her opinion. What did Kelsier want from her? She pulled back into her chair slightly as she realized that the other members of the crew had turned, looking at her. Vin said slowly.
Oh, don't intimidate the poor thing, Kelsier, Breeze said with a wave of his hand.
Vin nodded, but Kelsier didn't turn away from her.
No, really. Tell me what you're thinking, Vin. You've got a much larger enemy threatening you. What do you do?
Well, she said slowly, you don't fight him, that's for certain. Even if you won somehow, you'd be so hurt and broken that you couldn't fight off anyone else.
Makes sense, Doxson said. But we might not have a choice. We have to get rid of that army somehow.
And if it just left the city? She asked. That would work too? If I had a deal with someone big, I'd try and distract him first. Get him to leave me alone.
Ham chuckled.
Good luck getting the garrison to leave Luthadel. The Lord Ruler sends squads out on patrol sometimes, but the only time I know of the entire garrison leaving was when that Scar Rebellion broke out down in Coeur d'Alene a half-century ago.
Doxson shook his head.
Vin's idea is too good to dismiss that easily, I think. Really, we can't fight the garrison, so we need to get them to leave the city somehow.
Yes, Breeze said, but it would take a particular crisis to require involving the garrison. If the problem weren't threatening enough, the Lord Ruler wouldn't send the entire garrison. If it were too dangerous, he'd hunker down and send for his Kolos.
A rebellion in one of the nearby cities? Ham suggested.
That leaves us with the same problem as before, Kelsier said, shaking his head. If we can't get the Scar here to rebel, we'll never get ones outside the city to do so.
What about a feint of some sort, then? Ham asked. We're assuming that we'll be able to raise a sizable group of soldiers. If they pretend to attack someplace nearby, perhaps the Lord Ruler would send the garrison out to help.
I doubt he'd send away to protect another city, Breeze said. Not if it left him exposed in Luthadel.
The group fell silent, thinking again. Vin glanced around, then found Kelsier's eyes on her.
What?
He asked. She squirmed a bit, glancing down.
How far away are the pits of Hath Sin?
She finally asked. The crew paused. Finally, Breeze laughed.
Oh, now that's devious. The nobility don't know that the pits produce atium, so the Lord Ruler couldn't make much of a fuss, not without revealing that there's something very special about those pits. That means no Kolos.
They wouldn't arrive in time anyway, Ham said. The pits are only a couple of days away. If they were threatened, the Lord Ruler would have to respond quickly. The garrison would be the only force in striking distance.
Kelsier smiled, eyes alight.
And it wouldn't take much of an army to threaten the pits either. 1,000 men could do it. We send them to attack, then when the garrison leaves, we march our second larger force in and seize Luthadel itself. By the time the garrison realized that they'd been duped, they wouldn't be able to get back in time to stop us from taking the city walls.
Could we keep them, though? Eden asked apprehensively. Ham nodded eagerly.
With 10,000 ska, I could hold this city against the garrison. The Lord Ruler would have to send for his kolos.
By then, we'd have the Atium, Kelsier said, and the great houses won't be in any position to stop us. They'll be weakened and frail because of their internal fighting.
Doxson was scribbling furiously on his pad.
We'll need to use Yeadon's caves, then. They're within striking distance of both our targets, and they're closer to Luthadel than the pits are. If our army left from there, it could get here before the garrison could return from the pits.
Kelsier nodded. Doxson continued to scribble.
I'll have to start stockpiling supplies in those caves, maybe make a trip out to check conditions there. And how are we going to get the soldiers there?
Yeadon asked.
That's a week outside the city, and ska aren't allowed to travel on their own.
I've already got someone who can help us there, Kelsier said, writing Attack Pits of Hath Sin beneath Luthadel Garrison on his board.
I have a friend that can give us a front to run canal boats to the north. Assuming, Yeadon said, you can even make good on your first and primary promise. I paid you to gather me an army. 10,000 men is a great number, but I've still to see an adequate explanation of how you're going to raise them. I've already told you the kinds of problems we've had trying to recruit in Luthadel.
We won't need the general population to support us, Kelsier said. Just a small percentage of them. There are nearly 1 million workers in and around Luthadel. This should actually be the easiest part of the plan, since we happen to be in the presence of one of the world's greatest soothers. Breeze, I'm counting on you and your allomancers to force us up a nice selection of recruits.
Breeze sipped his wine.
Kelsier, my good man, I wish you wouldn't use words like force in reference to my talents. I simply encourage people.
Well, can you encourage us up an army? Doxson asked.
How much time do I have? Breeze asked.
1 year, Kelsier said. We'll plan this to go off next fall.
Assuming the Lord Ruler does gather his forces to attack Yeadon once we attack the city, we might as well make him do it in the winter.
10,000 men? Breeze said with a smile. Gathered from a resistant population in less than 1 year. It would certainly be a challenge.
Kelsier chuckled.
From you? That's as good as a yes. Start in Luthadel, then move to the surrounding cities. We need people who are close enough to gather at the caves.
Breeze nodded.
We'll also need weapons and supplies, Ham said. And we'll need to train the men.
I've already got a plan to get weapons, Kelsier said. Can you find some men to do the training?
Ham paused thoughtfully.
Probably. I know some ska soldiers who fought in one of the Lord Ruler's suppression campaigns.
Yeadon paled.
Traitors!
Ham shrugged.
Most of them aren't proud of what they did, he said. But most of them also like to eat. It's a hard world, Yeadon.
My people will never work with such men, Yeadon said.
They'll have to, Kelsier said sternly. A large number of ska rebellions fail because their men are poorly trained. We're going to give you an army of well-equipped, well-fed men, and I'll be damned if I'm going to let you get them slaughtered because they were never taught which end of a sword to hold.
Kelsier paused, then eyed Ham.
However, I do suggest that you find men who are bitter against the Final Empire for what it forced them to do. I don't trust men whose loyalty only goes as far as the boxings in their pockets.
Ham nodded, and Yeadon quieted. Kelsier turned, writing Ham, Training, and Breeze, Recruitment, beneath Troops on the board.
I'm interested in your plan to get weapons, Breeze said. How exactly do you intend to arm 10,000 men without making the Lord Ruler suspicious? He keeps a very careful eye on the armament flows.
We could make the weapons, Clubs said. I have enough extra wood that we could churn out a war staff or two every day. Could probably get you some arrows, too. I appreciate the offer, Clubs, Kelsier said, and I think that's a good idea. However, we're going to need more than staves.
We'll need swords, shields, and armor. And we need them quickly enough to begin training.
How then are you going to do it? Breeze asked.
The great houses can get weapons, Kelsier said. They don't have any problems arming their personal retinues.
You want us to steal from them?
Kelsier shook his head. No. For once we're going to do things somewhat legally. We're going to buy our weapons. Or rather, we're going to have a sympathetic nobleman buy them for us. Clubs laughed bluntly.
A nobleman sympathetic to the Ska? It will never happen.
Well, never happened a short time ago, then, Kelsier said lightly, because I've already found someone to help us. The room fell silent, save for the crackling of the fireplace. Vin squirmed slightly in her chair, glancing at the others. They seemed shocked.
Who?
Ham asked.
His name is Lord Renu, Kelsier said. He arrived in the area a few days back. He's staying in Feliz. He doesn't quite have enough influence to establish himself in Luthadel. Besides, I think it's prudent to keep Renu's activities a bit removed from the Lord Ruler.
Vin cocked her head. Feliz was a small suburb-style city an hour outside of Luthadel. She and Reen had worked there before moving into the capital city.
How had Kelsier recruited this Lord Renu?
Had he bribed the man, or was it some sort of scam?
I know of Renu, Breeze said slowly. He's a Western lord. He has a great deal of power in the foremost dominance.
Kelsier nodded.
Lord Renu recently decided to try and elevate his family to high noble status. His official story is that he came south in order to expand his mercantile efforts. He hopes that by shipping fine southern weaponry to the north, he can earn enough money and make enough connections to build himself a keep in Luthadel by the end of the decade. The room was quiet.
But, Ham said slowly, those weapons will be coming to us instead.
Kelsier nodded.
We'll have to fake the shipping records, just in case.
That's quite an ambitious front, Kel, Ham said. A lord's family working on our side.
But, Breeze said, looking confused, Kelsier, you hate noblemen.
This one's different, Kelsier said with a sly smile. The crew studied Kelsier. They didn't like working with a nobleman. Vin could tell that much easily. It probably didn't help that Renu was so powerful. Suddenly Breeze laughed. He leaned back in his chair, downing the last of his wine.
You blessed madman! You killed him, didn't you? Renu, you killed him and replaced him with an imposter.
Kelsier's smile broadened. Yeadon cursed, but Ham simply smiled.
Ah, now that makes sense. Or at least it makes sense if you're Kelsier the Foolhardy.
Renu is going to take up permanent residence in Feliz, Kelsier said.
He'll be our front if we need to do anything official. I'll use him to purchase armaments and supplies, for instance. Breeze nodded thoughtfully.
Efficient?
Efficient? Yeadon asked. You killed a nobleman. A very important one.
You're planning to overthrow the entire empire, Yeadon, Kelsier noted. Renu isn't going to be the last aristocratic casualty in this little endeavor.
Yes, but impersonating him? Yeadon asked. That sounds a little risky to me.
You hired us because you wanted extraordinary results, my dear man, Breeze said, sipping his wine. In our line of work, extraordinary results usually require extraordinary risks.
We minimize them as best we can, Yeadon, Kelsier said. My actor is very good. However, these are the sorts of things we're going to be doing in this job.
And if I order you to stop a few of them? Yeadon asked.
You can shut down the job at any time, Doxson said, not looking up from his ledgers.
But as long as it is in motion, Kelsier has final say on plans, objectives, and procedures. That is how we work. You knew that when you hired us.
Eden shook his head ruefully.
Well, Kelsier asked, do we continue or not? The call is yours, Eden.
Feel free to call an end to it, friend, Breeze said with a helpful voice. Don't be afraid of offending us. I, for one, look favorably upon free money.
Vin saw Yeadon pale slightly. In Vin's estimation, he was fortunate that Kelsier hadn't simply taken his money and stabbed him in the chest. But she was becoming increasingly convinced that wasn't the way things worked around here.
This is insane, Yeadon said.
Trying to overthrow the Lord Ruler? Breeze asked. Why, yes, as a matter of fact, it is.
All right, Eden said, sighing. We continue.
Good, Kelsier said, writing Kelsier Equipment under Troops.
The Renew Front will also give us an in with Luthadel High Society. This will be a very important advantage. We'll need to keep careful track of Great House politics if we're going to start a war.
This house war might not be as easy to pull off as you think, Kelsier, Breeze warned. The current lot of high noblemen is a careful, discriminating group.
Kelsier smiled.
Then it's good that you're here to help, Breeze. You're an expert at making people do what you want. Together, you and I will plan how to make the high nobility turn on each other. Major house wars seem to happen every couple of centuries or so. The current group's competence will only make them more dangerous, so getting them riled up shouldn't be that hard. In fact, I've already started the process.
Breeze raised an eyebrow, then glanced at Ham. The thug grumbled a bit, pulling out a golden 10 boxing coin and flipping it across the room to the self-satisfied Breeze.